You probably noticed with all the Christmas decorations that we have entered into the season of Advent. And in the Christian tradition, those frequently have themes. And I've decided to walk us through those themes each Sunday as we go along. So today's theme is hope. We'll talk next week about love and then peace and then joy. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about it with us, this group, and maybe of a less traditional way, and even, as you'll hear in today's message, question maybe some of the ways that it's been practiced traditionally. So my message is entitled, Keep Hope Alive. There are, of course, times that hope seems fleeting. The reality is that in the midst of a very severe leadership change in our nation, many progressive Christians are feeling like hope is hard to hold on to. And if you believe what you read on social media, some folks even say that it feels like all hope is lost. Now, since I said we're going to be talking about hope, it would probably be good to briefly define hope before we continue. So I'll start with Desmond Tutu. Desmond Tutu says, hope is being able to see that there is light despite all of the darkness. That's lovely, but I think we could probably use something a little more specific. So I looked around, and I like actually the way that Wikipedia defines hope. They do a pretty good job with it. Wikipedia says that hope is an optimistic attitude of mind that is based on an expectation of positive outcomes related to events and circumstances in one's life or in the world at large. It even goes on to say, among its opposites are dejection, hopelessness, and despair. So, in general, I agree with that assessment, but I do have to say that I think that there is another, more pertinent opposite to hope. Fear. See, hope is imagining what good is going to happen. Fear is the opposite. It's imagining what bad is going to happen. And because of it, I just think that fear is the opposite of hope. Neil Donald Walsh, author of the book series Conversations with God, gives fear a definition by means of an acronym. He says that fear is false evidence appearing real. Most religions actually teach the value of hope and the needlessness of fear. On one level or another, whether it is from personal experience, spiritual studies, or even other sources, we all sort of know that being afraid of the future is just about as silly and useless as being afraid of our own shadows, and yet we fear it all the same. My opening example is actually a good case in point. Many progressives are finding it hard, understandably, finding it hard to hold on to hope right now. Why, though? Why? Because we fear what tomorrow is going to hold for us, particularly for those who are already marginalized. Sure, we know that simply fearing it isn't going to change anything. We probably even understand that fearing the future without doing anything about it is actually worse than being indifferent about the future. Fear without action is suffocating, disabling, and is depressing. And yet we tend to persist in it. The question is why? One possible answer comes from that quote I shared from Walsh. It's because it's a false sense of reality. We imagine what we don't want to lose, and then we instantly grow afraid of that loss. But we're being fooled. We're tricking ourselves out of a secure now and replacing it with an insecure sense of what if. The only reality that exists is in each passing second, the here and now, in this moment. And yet, with each passing second comes the difficulty of not knowing what will come next. And that provides the opportunity to either hope for or to fear what is coming next. So this cycle of trying to live into what it is of each moment, all the while having to make a choice of how to respond to what it might be, becomes this constant repeating reality for us. So, what can we do to heal this repeating sort of self-inflicted wound of fear? As I mentioned, I think hope is the opposite of fear, and it seems like a good solution. In a way, hope is the reality that what we wish to see for the future, and fear is its shadow. Fear simply represents what could go wrong. It's our imagination, an inability to see and control our futures, and it makes us anxious in general. The Buddha says, hope is important because it can make the present moment less difficult to bear. If we believe that tomorrow will be better, we can bear a hardship today. And Dr. King says we must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. See, there's little doubt that spirituality around the world sees hope as an essential ingredient in forming a healthy life. But I have a concern about how that hope is sometimes taught, particularly in the Christian church. You see, too frequently, hope is placed in the hands of some holy other. We're taught to have faith and to trust in the one whom we worship. Frankly, that is cheap, it's easy, and it requires no real investment from us, and it's a lie. Not only that, but reality demands that we play games of sort of cognitive dissonance with ourselves to hold on to a belief like that. If we're told to trust and have hope in the divine other, when we find out that little Johnny has leukemia, but we stop and we do nothing, we're living into a false hope. I'd go as far as to say it isn't actually hope at all. It's more like an unfounded optimism. If we do nothing at all for little Johnny, the odds are he will not make it. All too frequently, placing our hope in a higher being makes us complacent and unjustifiably content. It fills us with unfounded optimism. After all, if the divine other is to be the bearer of hope, why is there so much in the world that is less than hope for? I'm sorry, I just can't buy into that perspective. You see, the way I see it, hope requires action. Without action, hope is unfounded optimism. If we do nothing for little Johnny, our hope is ill-advised. Now, if we make certain that he gets the best medical treatment we can access, then hope becomes real. Gallup senior scientist Dr. Shane Lopez, in his book called Making Hope Happen, Create the Future You Want for Yourself and Others, he speaks of a study that he and his colleagues conducted. Their findings showed that hope leads to everything from better school performance to success in the workplace to greater happiness overall. And it makes sense. According to Lopez, when we're excited about what is next, we invest more in our daily lives, and we can see beyond our current challenges. Lopez, who's actually a leading researcher in hope, views hope like oxygen. He says, we can't live without it. Lopez tells us that hope includes a range of emotions, such as joy and awe and excitement. But it's not empty tunnel vision enthusiasm. Hope is a combination of your head and your heart. He describes it as the golden mean between euphoria and fear. Hopeful people pick good goals, know how to make them happen, And then spot and seek out pathways that will move them forward. You see, hope requires action. Said differently, hope is optimism backed by actions. As I said, Lopez calls hope the golden mean between euphoria and fear. Both hope and fear are actually great motivators. And they both have the capacity to promote growth within us, but hope creates space in our minds and in our hearts. Fear, more often than not, restricts it. I mean, think of how you feel when you're afraid. You sort of tense up and you kind of go on high alert. Your primal flight or fight instinct kicks in just a bit, or maybe a lot. Imagine walking down a dark, deserted street and you hear someone following you. The instant you become aware of it, your body and mind kind of go into hyperdrive. And all your energy focuses on, am I in danger? What do I do? Do I turn to confront? Do I run? If I confront them, then what? If I run, where am I going to go? Your entire world sort of collapses in on that moment in order to focus on the situation. But when you're feeling hopeful, your body's relaxed. You feel generous and more open, not only with others, but with yourself as well. Your world expands with ideas for how the hope could gather even more momentum. You feel motivated. In his book, Lopez tells us that hope is contagious. Your hope, he says, is actually dependent on your entire social network, including best friends, role models, secondhand associates, and your hope, he says, can be shared with others. Unfortunately, the same can be true of your fear. When fear takes too much of a hold on personality, rigidity of thought and paranoia begin to set in. When this happens on a national level, the same trend can be seen. You end up with things like racism, sexism, and hate. Obama inspired our country to make history by realizing that we need in our country the very same things that we need in our personal life. Hope. But that doesn't mean fear is an altogether bad thing. When we use the better parts of hope and fear together, we're in the best position that we can be in. The best part of fear is that it teaches us what we are afraid to lose. And the best part of hope is that once we know what we're afraid of losing, we can set about nurturing it and keeping it strong and safe. The important thing to remember is that hope should be, by far, the greater force in that equation. Fear is the prompt. Hope is the way. Fear is the prompt. Hope is the way. Fear is about trying to survive something. Hope is about knowing why you want to survive. So, while the two are opposites, they function together with the actions of hope keeping fear in its place. According to Lopez, we can spread hope by modeling it through our stories and actions, providing support to each other. Hope gives us the power to affect change. In this time when so many are in fear of the direction our nation is going, we should use the fear that we have to teach us about what we are afraid to lose. Once we know what we're afraid of losing, we should set about strengthening those things, allowing hope to keep the fears at bay. Not removing them, not squashing them, but using them as fuel for the fire and a realization of what really, truly matters to us. As Lopez writes in his book, please build up your hope. Then with hope to spare, help others build a future that is much better than the present. Much better. I'll simply conclude with the words of Emily Dickinson. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without words and never stops at all. Your opportunity to share your thoughts on today's topic of hope or fear or the talk that we just heard. Is there anybody who has things that they would like to share or contribute? Absolutely. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all.
Well, thank you, Mark. I'm David. Thank you for your message. Your message is probably you have expectations, you want to do something about them, positive expectations. And I want to just put a point in for maybe times when you want to keep the positive expectations and you don't know what you can do to make it better.
And but you can always study or look or research so you can put actions with that hope. Even if you don't know what it is, you can put the action behind trying to figure out what it is.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Is that what
you're
talking about?
It seems to me that there's a, if your expectation is things are going to be really bad, sometimes you do things and make them really bad.
Sure.
And if you think things are going to be better, then you're doing something.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just had an opportunity yesterday to see a documentary about a ship that was torpedoed during World War II, so they had 900 sailors in the water. Nobody knew they were there, and a lot of them didn't make it. And it seemed as though at least some of the ones that made it, when interviewed later, sort of had they see a plane go over, they would hope that it would see them, but they couldn't do anything about it. I guess they waved at it.
Yeah.
So there was some component of positive expectations. I guess doing what you could, even though you weren't sure what was going to get you.
Well, I would make the argument that all of those who remain floating were practicing active hope by staying alive. Otherwise, if you were in complete, if you completely feared that all of this wasn't going to, why would you even try?
Well, I think that's what happened to a lot of them.
To a lot of them. They just gave up. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Are there others? Over here.
Part of the discussion at the Thanksgiving family dinner was a certain discouragement at the outcome of the election, and yet, what to do next? I recall my first conversation with one of my sons after that, and I said, we just have to put our shoulders to the wheel. And then our conversation drifted on. But part of the Thanksgiving conversation, apparently the News and Observer put out a list of places where one could go and volunteer to make hope, what do you call it, manifest.
Yeah.
Or to quote a friend here, the action plan. If you don't know what to do, there were some suggestions, and probably a number of us could think of suggestions where we could put our shoulder to the wheel and make something positive change.
Absolutely. Are there others? If not, I will. Oh, here we go.
Couldn't see me. I was behind you. I've been thinking as I've listened to what you said, Mark, and to the comments. There's been a lot of anger about the outcome of the election. And I remember some time ago, one of my psychology mentors said that anger is always a secondary emotion, and it comes in response to other more primary emotions. And he said the main one of those is fear. I've thought about that over the years, and I think that it's not just fear. It's either fear and or sadness. So I think that in terms of hope and this conversation, it makes sense to pay some attention to what are we fearful of and what are we sad about, and then think about which shoulder to put to which wheel to try to propel things forward. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Any others?
I don't recall the author of this book that I read, but I remember the story he told. He was a physician in an internment camp in Germany. And he survived by redoing his papers that the Germans had destroyed and everything. And he gave the example that through the camp, the word would get out that they were going to be liberated on April the 10th. And it was unbelievable, the momentum of a false rumor, how it gathered power and authority. And everyone thought that they, oh, really, on the April the 10th, from a rumor, they were going to be liberated. And then on April 10th, nothing happened. And a large portion of those folks passed because they lost hope.
Hope's an interesting thing. There's another story related to the Holocaust of shortly after prisoners were liberated, there was a place where they were keeping all the kids who had lost their parents. And the kids were having nightmares every night. They weren't sleeping through the night. They couldn't. And they talked to them, and they found out that everything was so volatile in the camps that they feared for what tomorrow wouldn't bring, like food or whatever. And so they literally just took pieces of bread and put them under the kids' pillows, and the kids started sleeping through the night because they had hope for tomorrow. They knew they had their food, which they weren't ever certain of. And hope can be a very powerful thing. Are there others?
But in light of what Bill and Vance said, when you were talking, I was kind of going, listening to what you had to say, and I was happy that you made the case that both hope and fear were action words. I guess you could be hopeful and just sit there and be hopeful, but usually I think it would, some action would come from it. But I think the opposite of fear and hope is hopelessness. And that's where, that is really debilitating. And you probably could get to the point of not being able to act. And I think that's where a group or a community such as this, I think that's where our place is, is to help the hopeless.
Absolutely. Thank you.